faith-inspiring radio. This is UCB Ireland.
Joining me on the phone right now for Focus on Friday this week is my special guest, Andrew Hawkins. Andrew is the UK and European Campaign Director for Leading the Way. Andrew, it's great to have you on the phone with us. How are you?
Yeah, it's good. Thank you, Robbie.
Andrew, you are the UK and European Campaign Director for Leading the Way. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay, now before we get into all of that, because that's a massive, massive role you've taken on for Michael Youssef and the organisation Leading the Way, as is always the case with Focus on Friday, we want to delve a little bit into Andrew and find out who he really is and what he's done. Sure. And who, you know, where he comes from. So, of course, on the phone from the UK right now, whereabouts in the UK are you?
Well, currently I'm living in northeast London, the borough of Havering. So that is around the Romford Hornchurch area.
Okay.
Of London.
And is that where you were born and raised?
No, not at all. In fact, I'm originally from Cambridge, from the town or city of Cambridge. And that's where my parents still live. So for the first 18, 19 years of my life, I was, as I like to say, born and educated in Cambridge. It always sounds very good.
Now, here's the question, okay? Did you go to Cambridge?
Yes, yes. From birth through to university. I didn't go to university in Cambridge, but I was certainly educated through primary and secondary education. And that set me up, really, for then moving on.
We'll find out a little bit about your teen years very, very shortly. But let's go right back to your childhood. A good childhood?
Yeah, it's very stable, very, very blessed. I look back with fondness on my childhood, really. My parents are strong believers. We attended church every Sunday. They supported me in many different activities. For instance, I was encouraged to play a musical instrument. At the age of 9, I began playing trombone.
Okay.
And so worked through the grades as well, and eventually ended up in some good bands and orchestras, and some of those I toured around Europe with. Played in a small jazz group, 20s, 30s jazz, even got paid for that.
So nice.
There was that musical background. I auditioned for Jesus College Choir, Cambridge, as a chorister and spent 4 years singing for Jesus College Choir. Interestingly, around the time that Prince Edward was at university at Jesus College, and I literally bumped into him once. I was late for chapel and he was exiting the chapel and we sort of crashed into each other.
So how,
not that he'll remember that.
Yeah, he probably won't remember that, but you do. But what's this? What's the story? Is it, oh, pardon me, sir, is it all right, Ed?
Yes. I think I was rather embarrassed. I can't remember what I said at the time. But so I had that musical upbringing. And then also I attended Boys Brigade well, back then it was called Robins, now Anchor Boys, right the way through to Officer and also Crusaders, as it was.
Wow.
Back then, Boy Crusaders. So my parents really invested in me and wanted me to, you know, use my spare time around education as much as possible. And I really was blessed by that.
And what about siblings? Are you one of or only child? Or
One of three. So my brother and sister are a couple of years behind me. They're twins.
Okay.
So my parents, yes, and they had that to cope with. And I'm the eldest. And my sister lives in Cambridge. My brother in Bromley, so not too far from me.
So what's it like living with twins?
Well, it was challenging. Sometimes they would gang up on me, the eldest, I think. But we generally were fine together as children. I can't remember any particular problems. It seemed a happy family, and I was really, you know, as I say, blessed by that.
And as a lad, you're into music, you're into education. What about sport life? Are you into sports?
I wasn't much at that age. More when I left for university, I took up badminton and tennis. I enjoyed a bit of snooker, I think, when I was younger.
Liked a bit of snooker, yes. I was into snooker myself.
Yeah, but nothing too rigorous, shall we say. I avoided rugby. I did not like the sort of more athletic sports. Although actually, I did enjoy some athletics, track and field events in school. I remember that.
Yeah, so you did tennis and a bit of track and field. I did a bit of track and field myself, but snooker was my. For me, it was wonderful. It was a lot of exercise because you did walk in snooker. You walked around the table. You know,
that's
people
right.
say you didn't get any exercise. I did. I walked around the table. Yeah.
And I remember my brother was actually a very good golfer at a young age, and I did accompany him sometimes on the golf course. Not that I played, just sort of watched him and carried his bag around.
So what is it then, do you think, that your biggest, fondest memory of your early childhood years?
I mean, my music definitely took me places. The jazz band I played in at weddings, and we had dances where people literally would be in front of us dancing to our music. I toured Europe with a youth band. I was in orchestras at university. So those were precious moments. Boys Brigade particularly had a huge impact on my life in terms of faith from an early age. And yeah, I was able to serve in the Boys Brigade at officer rank. And that was hugely pleasurable.
There are going to be people listening to this, Andrew, who goes, this guy kind of had it all. he had a good life. He had a good home life. He did all of these activities, you know, the Boys Brigade. And here in Ireland, a lot of people may or may not know about that. But, you know, officer. So like, he had it all. Yeah.
Well, yes. I mean, we did in many respects. I wouldn't say we were a wealthy family. We had enough. But life was focused around church and faith, and that was fulfilling, you know, even at that age. I attended church every Sunday. My parents actually quite enjoyed it and hearing the message preached. But it wasn't till my teens that I actually made a personal commitment.
So I was going to ask you about that, actually. What was it that made you get to a place where you realized, actually, I have to make my own personal commitment?
Yeah. Well, it was a visiting missionary to the church, a well-known name. I'll come to that in a moment. But he took me aside and sat me down and literally went through the little booklet, Two Ways to Live, and drew his own diagrams and explained it all to me. You know, you're either going your own way or God's way, and these are the consequences. And so, no one had ever done that before. It actually personally challenged me. I'd been following my parents' footsteps and, you know, quite happy with that. But this really did strike me at the time, and I thought, well, actually, I've got to decide for myself. Am I going my own way or God's way? And I decided at that stage, no, I'm going to follow Christ. And the name of that missionary, he wasn't even an ordinand at that stage, was Rico Tice.
Oh, wow, okay.
At All Souls Langham Place in London, although now he's moved on. But, you know, he was instrumental in my conversion, you could say.
And how old were you then?
Only 16, 17.
So early years, and you hadn't even got to, kind of formative university at this stage.
No. And actually, just before that, and when I certainly when I went to university in Nottingham, I studied to be an architect at Nottingham after my Cambridge years. And I remember the first night going, it was in halls of residence, there was the Christian Union meeting, or there was like a time in the bar, and I did go initially to the bar, but I walked out to the Christian Union meeting, and that was my stand, and that really set me up, I have to say, from there on.
So what caused you not to, this is moving away from the pub, the bar, so what was it that made you move?
I just sensed that, you know, this was my direction in life. I'm not going to go the way of the world. My roommate opposite me, same background as me pretty much, but he decided this was his chance to be sort of free of all his past, whereas I was going to continue in the way that my parents had raised me, and I was determined to live for Christ, and that's where it really kind of began to make a difference in my life at university.
That's a real honouring of your upbringing, isn't it? An honouring of your mum and dad.
Yes, well, as I say, they've invested so much in me, and I just, there was that sense of, you know, this is the way Christ is calling me, and I'm not going back on that. I'm here at university to to live for him and do my best. And as I say, honour my parents in that respect.
Did you get any stick because you were a young lad and this is what you chose, and you chose that life instead of the pub life? Did you get any stick from your roommates and people at college?
Yeah, because I wasn't following their footsteps. They would get drunk sometimes, come back and bang on my door and window and shout abuse. And yeah, I did get some of that. But, you know, I had a good supportive Christian group in the Hall of Residence at the time. And that was... That was the way for me, yeah.
It's an interesting time we're doing this, actually, Andrew, because it's obviously the end of the schooling year for many people leaving high school, getting ready for university or college or wherever they're going, leaving home perhaps for the first time, and maybe young Christians, young teen Christians heading out the door. As we close out this first section of Focus on Friday today, have you got a word of advice for young guys in particular as they get ready to go down this route? Where you have been?
Yeah. Well, I would say, do not depart from the way of the Lord. Stick to it. It is the way of fulfillment. It's the way of eternity. In fact, yesterday someone shared a verse with me for their family. One of their children has had to take a stand, and this was the verse from 1 Corinthians 16, verse 13. Be on your guard, stand firm in the faith, be men and women of courage, be strong, and do everything in love. And that's been a verse for them as a family, because they were considering either withdrawing their child from school or keeping them there. They decided to keep them there and be a witness. So I would say the same. If you're leaving home, you know, be on your guard, stand firm in the faith.
You're listening to UCB Ireland, serving the church, reaching the nation.
Welcome to Focus on Friday. This week, my guest is Andrew Hawkins. And we began to talk about early childhood and university, and a really good scripture, great advice for young people who may be leaving this summer, going off to university, to stand firm in your faith. How many years, Andrew, did you do at university, and what did you study?
Well, I was there for 3 years. It was between 91 and 94, studying architecture. I was always good at school. I did well in my GCSEs. I was the first year of the GCSE, by the way, back in 1988, that was.
Wow.
Very different type of exam paper back then, but I was good at technical drawing and design. I got an A at GCSE for that, and it just made sense to follow through. And afterwards, I studied a BTEC national diploma in construction that then led to, that was an A-level equivalent course that led to university in Nottingham, and sort of refined my focus on architecture. Did very well in the first year. I came one of the top students at university. But then, really, in the second year, there was a change of focus in my life. I really sensed the Lord was redirecting me, not to drop out, but to complete my degree and then go into ministry in the church full time. So I sort of, my heart was not in it in the way it had been at the start.
And when you completed that and you went into ministry, did you ever use your architectural knowledge and degree for purpose or for work?
Yeah, well, not really for work. I had some work experience, and I did produce drawings for a company in Cambridge of architects. Been useful, though, over the years, because I've been in a few properties and designed like a porch and submitted the planning application, even designed our loft extension at home that we currently have. And so it's never wasted, certainly.
Right.
And I enjoy photography and design and creativity still now. I even helped my son through his GCSEs. So it's always worthwhile. But, of course, regulations change, rules and regulations, so... I'm not up to speed with that, but certainly, you know, it's good discipline going to university and studying anyway, and the Lord used me there in many respects within the Christian Union as well.
So you were saying that you became an officer in it was the Boys' Brigade. You became an officer.
Yeah.
And so what does that entail?
There are different ranks of officer, and I was just one of many in this company in Cambridge who would lead the other boys, really, and lead them in drill, lead them in some of the program that was organized. So, yeah, like any officer, sort of commanding some authority. And that, I think that definitely helped my leadership skills. I went away on a special course with the Boys Brigade to develop my leadership skills. So that was, again, a good foundation for where I am now.
And was that ever something, because in my limited understanding, does anybody ever go from there into military service?
Well, they can do. I mean, there can be an interest. There's not a natural pathway, but obviously it could develop into, long-term future in the military. I mean, even now, we can talk more about this, but I'm involved in the military and in the police myself.
Mm.
We can speak more about that, but I never knew that was going to happen back then. But it's, again, it's all playing out now, later on in life.
So coming back to university, you've left university, you're not going to be a full-time architect, you're going to go into ministry. What was it that you did?
So there was, a shift at university. I really knew a powerful call on my life to enter the church. I did consider ordination in the Church of England. That did not, in the end, work out. I'd served at university on the Christian Union, the evangelism team, and also leading a soup run to the homeless in Nottingham. I was one of the leaders for that.
Nice.
So I served the Lord and realized that I felt, so fulfilled doing that, that the Lord was leading by his Spirit into ministry full time. So, in fact, I applied for a role with the Church Pastoral Aid Society here in the UK as a lay assistant minister.
Mm.
And they sent me to London, of all places. I said to the Lord, not London, and what happens? I end up in London.
It's always the way. Never say not.
I know, that's something I've learned. But they placed me in Wandsworth, the parish of Wandsworth in London, as a lay assistant to the minister in two churches. So I had first-hand experience for a year, which actually turned into a second year. And that, again, was a great start in ministry.
And was this before you decided to look towards marriage and things? This is just you on your own, yeah?
This is me, yeah. This is me on my own, starting out, funny enough, as we sometimes say to the Lord, Lord, I'm single and I'm going to devote my whole life to you. I'm not going to get married. I was like that kind of attitude, at the time. And then what happens a few years later, along comes my wife, Anna, and the sparks fly, and here we are 26 years later married. So,
congratulations on your 26 years.
You sort of start out with that fervency and passion and commit your life, as I did, fully into ministry.
It seems like, from childhood to this point, how old would you around about this age in ministry work? What, early 20s?
I was, yes, I was. Yeah. Yes, I was. So it must have been 2021.
So it seems like you've had a smooth road. Life is never easy. There's always challenges in life, but it seems you've had a smooth road.
Well, I've really known the Lord's leading and guiding, and I wouldn't say it's been smooth. There've been some real difficulties within family life, real challenges since I left home. Particularly around my brother and sister and some of their activities. And so it's not been easy. My parents and my father with mental health issues. There's been a lot that's happened, but the Lord has very clearly led me. I did consider, as I say, ordination in the Church of England, but actually from my placement in Wandsworth, the door opened into London City Mission. And that's what I found in life. The doors have opened at the right time for me. The opportunities have opened.
There are an awful lot of people listening who will go, I kind of understand that, but I don't quite get it. Being led by God. Here's a straight question. Okay, so how did you know that you were being led by God?
So a number of factors in this. One is the conviction of the Holy Spirit. I've always had that sense of conviction that this is the road to take. I don't know whether that's something unique to my circumstances, but I've certainly known that. I've had as well scripture speak to me. I've always been a man in the Word, so constantly each day reading the scripture and learning to understand the will of God from scripture. And also other people confirming to me, saying, Andrew, yeah, this is the right way, you know, having that wisdom from senior, mature Christians. So I want to sort of listen to God and try and understand what he's saying to me, and that's the way life has turned out.
So you meet Anna, the two of you decide that this is it, this is the road you're going to go on. Did you remain in ministry work at that stage, or mission work, or did you go down the road of, shall we say, normal employment?
No, I stayed in ministry. When I was in Wandsworth, her family were literally down the road from me, and my family in Cambridge. Anna trained as a nurse at Addenbrookes Hospital in Cambridge, so we kind of swapped families, and that's how we got to know one another. And I left the parish of Wandsworth and joined London City Mission in 1996 as an engaged man, and then married in 1997 in my early years of London City Mission.
Yeah, and Anna continued to be nurse, or did she change then and just join you in mission work, or how did that work?
She's been forever a nurse at some different hospitals, but certainly where we've been in this northeast side of London, she's been here now, you know, since our married life, working for the local trust, and she's moved up, she's moved around some departments and moved up the ladder as well, so... she's now a senior nurse overseeing a whole team of nurses in diabetes and endocrinology, which is her speciality.
Did you ever feel that, you know, that you needed to go back into your architectural work, or was it always mission?
Yeah, it was always clear that to me that was a good grounding, a good foundation, excuse the pun, because... I have to say that, you know, I was at my drawing board and, you know, I would say, well, what am I building here? Am I building for myself or building for the Lord? And that was the challenge back then. And I've been building for the Lord ever since entering ministry. And as I say, from the Church of England, that led into London City Mission for 16 years. So that was quite a fair amount of time with one organisation.
UCB Ireland. More than just words, more than just music.
Welcome to Focus on Friday with myself, Robbie Frawley. My guest today is Andrew Hawkins, and it's been a pleasure to hear about his life as a child, into his teen life, into married life now, and working with London City Mission for 16 years. A long time, Andrew.
Yes, it was. I mean, I entered the mission not really giving an end date, but just seeing how it would develop. So the first, roughly split it in half, to be honest, the first 8 years I headed up a work on the Beckentry estate in Dagenham, one of the largest housing estates in Europe near the Ford motor factory. I was there managing the outreach into the community, and we began a coffee bar for street youth, which was very challenging at that time. And I had various staff sent my way to mentor over the years, some just for a year, some for longer. So, that was quite pioneering in some respects. So, I mean, the ministry had been there since the 1930s, but we had tried to rejuvenate it.
Now, some people are going to say outreach into the community doesn't work. It doesn't work. And others will say it works so well, it's incredible, okay? So here's a question for you. Is there a formula? I'm not even going to say, is there a secret way of doing this? What's the secret? I'm not going to say that. What I'm going to say is, what's the formula to make it successful?
Yeah, well, again, it's going back to knowing what God wants, really. I mean, I was there for the first few months. I thought, I'm not going to make any major changes. I'll just settle. I'll see what's already happening, and then we'll build on that. But straight away, the Lord had other ideas about this coffee bar for youth. There's a spare hall at the back of the site. We developed it using a team, a summer team that came to turn it into a more suitable venue for youth. And straight away, we were pioneering this work, and we were having gangs coming in and all sorts of issues, but the Lord had set this on my heart, as well as the other ministries, particularly visiting the community street by street, and actually being strategic in that and relevant, and taking the good newspaper with us and challenging lives and praying for people. And we had some great encounters, and people came to faith as a result.
And what was the biggest challenge that you had there? Was it gang warfare, or was it drugs, or what was it?
Yeah, a lot of gangs, youth gangs, crime was high, and a state with not much to offer. And so, they just need somewhere to go. And we thought, well, let's just open up the place and let them come in and meet Christians and try and influence their lives for Christ. Some of them were in and out of prison, so I wrote to them, and we kept up with the families. And we didn't see much fruit at the time, but as the years have gone by, successive missionaries have seen a lot more fruit because of that early work.
Was the coffee culture then very countercultural, or was it? It's just another coffee bar, or was this like something like, wow, never seen this before?
It was just something, really, a place to hang out, and we would offer tea and coffee and some soft drinks, but it was just a means to try and get them in, and there was sofas inside and tables made out of rubber tires, and it tried to be a bit inventive. Some spray painting. They could even do their own spray painting inside, so just make it their own. And
that was brave.
Oh yes, we were, which was quite radical really for me, but it was a way of trying to be relevant and meet them where they're at.
And did you live close by the community out there?
Yes, very, very close, only a sort of mile away from the center, on the edge of the estate. We'd have some of these teenagers even round our house, and to actually have them round the meal table playing like a game or something, to them was just so special. They loved it because that family focus, which for them was missing. We showed the love of Christ in that way.
There is something, and I say this with all integrity and respect, whatever. There's something very basic that we miss sometimes when we do outreach, and that is just showing somebody love.
I mean, we've a number of times been, again, quite radical. I never forget a lady who we knocked on her door, and she answered in tears and shared that her brother had just taken his life. She just heard the news.
Wow.
And we were there at that very moment, that very morning. The Lord has obviously led us there. And she said, I'm also distressed. I can't afford the funeral expenses. So I opened my mouth and said, don't worry, we'll pay for it all. London City Mission had to foot the bill, but she came to faith. I led her through a Bible study series. She was so impacted by what we'd done. She came to faith, was baptized, joined a church, and that's the kind of love that people need to experience.
Sometimes you've just got to go out on a limb. There are so many people over here in Dublin who are doing that, and around Ireland who are doing that.
Yeah.
And it's almost like they're doing it with no... It's not that there's no training, but it's like, we don't have to have all of this behind us before we get out and do. We've just got to go and reach the community.
Yeah, they've got to see faith lived. They've got to experience the care of Christians. Even if that's just cutting someone's grass, which I used to do as well for someone in that community, or giving them a bunch of flowers, congratulating them. Just something that will open the door, and then people, want to ask questions.
And did you stay there in that particular housing estate for long?
So I stayed there for 16 years.
In that area?
In that area. And that's where we've kind of stayed. We just moved up the road to Romford, just 3 or 4 miles from that estate now. But I still go back there, because what happened after 8 years at that centre is then I became chaplain full-time for the police, because the police... We encountered them quite frequently, as you can probably imagine.
Of course, yeah.
Through the street gangs. And I really sensed we needed to be praying more effectively for our estate and for the area. And we started a united prayer movement around the turn of the millennium. And I wanted to pray more effectively for crime. And so the police actually invited me out on patrol and said, come and see what our officers have to deal with. And I just and then realised, gosh, these men and women need support, and that's how the Lord kind of opened that door, really.
There is, we've said this time and time again here at UCB Ireland over the years, but also in church you hear this, there is a moment of raising your hand and saying, here I am, Lord, send me. And
yeah,
that seems right. Very much like what you did and how you responded to the call of God in your life.
Yeah, well, I then again sensed this is a need. I thought, right, I'm going to say to Barking Dagenham Police, have you got a chaplain? Which I did. And no, they haven't got a chaplain. They said, would you like to be our chaplain? I said, yes. And within an hour, literally an hour, the borough commander had approved it. I mean, that's how swift it was.
Wow.
It was confirming the call of God. And then I remember London City Mission tried to move me into another ministry south of London. And I visited this place. And as I visited that centre in South London, and another pioneering ministry, three police cars drove past at regular intervals. And the Lord just said to me, that's where I want you, in the back of that police car. And I actually then went full time for London City Mission as a chaplain to the police, covering five divisions here in the northeast of London.
And that was the back end of your time at London City Mission?
Yes, it was. I was an operational chaplain on patrol. The Met even gave me a hire car, a logbook to park on double yellow lines in emergencies. I had everything. They really threw everything to support me. And I had my own body armour, which I still have today, in uniform. I looked like an officer, to be honest, on patrol, but I have chaplain on my epaulettes instead of a number.
And is this so, actually to support the officers or to support the community?
Mainly the officers, but of course when you're patrolling with them, you are encountering every situation, and that's when the role comes into its own. Very unique privilege, actually, to minister on the front line in situations of death and disaster. And I think over the years I've seen every possible situation you can imagine, to be honest.
And you, it must have been quite harrowing at times to be part of this.
Yes, it was. London City Mission had to sort of look after me. Every year I'd have a debriefing with a Christian counsellor to make sure that, you know, I was managing
right.
myself because of some of the scenes I was experiencing. And as well, you know, the trauma of that, especially when it relates to you personally. I mean, that's a very deep subject, but you know, you've just got to be very careful.
You also have moved into a military capacity as well, is that right?
Yeah, so I left London City Mission. I carried with me the chaplaincy role in Barking and Dagenham Borough just to keep that ministry myself, and, you know, because I felt that was right, and so I still patrol once every couple of months with the police and support them. But I'm also now a chaplain in the Royal Air Force Air Cadets. I've been doing that for around 8 years at a local squadron in Romford. And then recently, in the last couple of years, they asked if I'd be the London wing chaplain, all voluntary this. So I now cover the 27 squadrons of London, making sure I'm recruiting chaplains for all those squadrons and overseeing that ministry. So it is quite a large responsibility, but again, I can try and work it into my time as and when.
You're a busy guy, and family and everything is growing at this stage for you, yeah?
Well, yes, you see, children came along 3 years after we were married, so I've got three children. One of them's married now themselves and has a child, so I'm a grandfather.
Congratulations.
So life is, yeah, very full, but as I say, very fulfilling
right.
at the same time. And that's for me, such a blessing that the Lord is, you know, using me in these various ways still.
You've had a very busy life up to this point.
Yep.
And what we're going to do in the final part of Focus on Friday this week is talk about you're leading into other ministries, but also what you're doing right now. And we'll do that yep. in just a moment.
Take us with you wherever you go. UCB Ireland.
Welcome to the final part of Focus on Friday with myself, Robbie Frawley. And today, my guest is Andrew Hawkins. A remarkable life led, you know, young kid, musician, track and field, university, staying the course, being true to your faith, and then God moving you into mission in a really tough area, but then going deeper. as a chaplain to the Met and a chaplain to the Air Cadets as well. And here we are now, Andrew, as we move forward into where we are now and what you're going to be doing and what you are doing for Leading the Way. But you've worked for other ministries as well.
Well, yes. Yeah, so Leading the Way really is kind of along the line of succession of different ministries. So after I left London City Mission, there was a short time with the Billy Graham Association assisting with a mission in London.
Right.
Then I spent 3 years in the Louis Palau Association as the UK Africa Church Relations Director. So a lot of time in Africa, co-directing large evangelistic campaigns in different countries. So a lot of travel involved in that. The final country was Malawi, and my wife actually lived in Malawi in her early years.
Wow.
Her father was in finance and stationed over there in Blantyre. So that was like 40 years later, we're back in Malawi for my wife's family, which was great. Also assisted and directed some events in New York for Louis Palau, and there was a number of different key events there as part of his ministry in 2015, I believe that was. So from there I entered Philo Trust with Canon J. John and became his church relations director to help with the Just One events at the Arsenal Emirates Stadium and the Gillingham Stadium in Kent, and we were in Singapore the following year in the National Stadium. So these are all events with thousands of people attending and hearing the good news of Jesus Christ and responding. And so I've been in that kind of line of ministry now since I left London City Mission, served briefly with Christian Concern for a year, and now here I am in Leading the Way, doing again these large campaigns around the UK and Europe.
So many incredible things that you're involved with. And of course, J. John is on our weekend teaching schedule here at UCB Ireland, Saturday evenings right. and Sunday evenings at 8:30 today with J. John. And we're really excited about what he's bringing to the table, which is great. Why Leading the Way?
Well, Leading the Way approached me a few years ago, interested in my experience in this type of ministry. Dr. Yusuf has a vision for 2025 to see 1 million souls turn to Christ under the ministry of Leading the Way. And part of that process is to have events around the world where he speaks and invites a response to the gospel. And because of my background with Billy Graham, Louis Palau, and J. John, they were interested in employing me. But at the time, that didn't work out. And so a year later, they came back to me, and the time was right for me to join with them. The ministry was more up and running, and they needed people like myself with that experience.
Here at UCB Ireland and myself, we're very much involved with Leading the Way, with what's happening in September. We'll get to that in a few minutes. But I have a question, okay? And it's not a question from my point of view, but it might be a question from others that says, surely events like this are old hat. We've done them, seen them, got the T-shirt. Do we really need to do them again?
There's definitely a time and place for them. I mean, right back to the scriptures, there were those moments when, you know, the apostles had opportunity to stand in front of thousands and preach the gospel. And ever since then, the same has happened across the decades. And, you know, even going back to Whitfield and Jonathan Edwards, they were doing the same at that stage. And people actually argued, oh, those days are gone. So, and then we more recently with Billy Graham and Louis Palau, but there's been now an interval for a while, certainly in Ireland. It's been 30, 40 years since a large event like this. And so I believe the time is right again. And there's certainly a lot of pros for such an event. It gives evangelistic focus. It means that Christians can come and bring their guests along and, feel confident in a crowd of people. And there's a number of other arguments that certainly would say this is a positive moment.
So this event that's taking place now, it's called Hope Celebration. It's going to happen in September. September 1st in Dublin at the Convention Centre on the Liffey, and September 3rd at the Waterfront in Belfast. Tell us a little bit about these.
So we've been in the process for many months now. We're building up to these events. It's not just about the event. It's also about preparing the church and mobilizing the church. So, you know, there've been prayer gatherings have started. Actually, these events have been a catalyst in both Dublin and Belfast for prayer gatherings. We've had training for the churches, preparing them for follow-up and discipleship. We've had training for every Christian recently in their walk and witness for the Lord, and they can serve at the event as encouragers, you know, come alongside those who respond. We've also got the Come and See initiative, a little leaflet for every Christian to write down people they know personally, family, friends, neighbors, colleagues, and pray over them and think about who they're going to invite and bring. So all this has been like the preparation period. Then we go into the proclamation phase in September, obviously, with the events. So there'll be great music, there'll be some live testimonies, some video, and it will all build up to Dr. Yusuf sharing the gospel and inviting a response. And then we go into the preservation phase, where we're looking after new believers, and we're not going to leave the cities until 90% are assimilated into the churches and are being discipled. So it's a whole process, not just about the event.
So in terms of success, somebody once asked me, how do you measure success? We were at an event for UCB, and it was a very genuine question, and I like the question, actually. It just said, so Robbie, what is a success for you at this event? So I'm going to ask you the same question. As the person who's kind of directing that on behalf of Leading the Way here in Ireland and in both sites, as it were, what's success for you?
I would want to see a legacy. You know, this is just the start of something. This is the catalyst behind the prayer movements. And, you know, this should encourage the church. It's like J. John would say, it gives a faith lift.
Right.
A faith lift. And it should continue. It should ripple on. You know, so afterwards, I know other places where I've served in other ministries where they've continued to have evangelistic events with other speakers coming. They've continued to pray. They've continued to add to the church those who are being saved and baptized. So it's not just about this one occasion. This should really, again, sort of give this lift, this boost, this injection of spiritual vitality, this stirring to the church to continue, you know, with this whole, well, really culture of the invitation, you know, inviting and bringing guests all the time into the churches, into events. And seeing God's kingdom come. That's what it's all about.
What do you think is the biggest obstacle to both of these events happening?
I think that post-COVID, there's a certain amount of apathy in the church, but also trying to rebuild the church and trying to, you know, meet demands in ministry. Pastors are struggling, and it's difficult to commit. And so we found that, you know, trying to encourage the church to be involved with us, but time is precious, and it's difficult when churches have their programs anyway set for the year to break out of the box. You know, we're succeeding gradually, and I think come the event, there'll be many, many churches represented there, many people inviting and bringing guests.
Andrew, we're getting close to the end of our time here on Focus on Friday, and being part of this event with you and with the team, the core team, it is an exciting event. It's a brilliant opportunity to have a wonderful man of God here on the island bringing a message of hope to so many people. How would you encourage the churches to get involved, and how can people actually end up going to this event?
Well, I would say make the most of the opportunity. These opportunities don't come round often. You know, the last one was 30, 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Make the most of this opportunity and bring people along to the events. And very shortly this week, we will be launching tickets. They are free. You need to go to the website, hopeireland.ie, where you can obtain your tickets. you know, have two, one for yourself, one for a guest, or more. We don't want them wasted. We want you to use them well. Pray over that ticket, who you're going to use it for, you know, on the list that you've written down that you're praying over. So this is an opportunity, really, a culmination for you to use at this time.
And there's limitation in terms of the seating capacity as well, correct?
Well, that's right. There's around 2,000 seats, so that's 1,000 Christians bringing 1,000 guests. So it'll be on a first-come, first-served basis, and we'll just fill up the venue from the front to the back, basically, on the night. But grab your tickets while you can, as they're launched this week.
Andrew, it's been fascinating hearing your story, and I do thank you for a couple of things. Thank you, first of all, for joining us on Focus on Friday, but thank you for staying the course. Thank you for digging in those university years and for turning out of the pub and into the Christian Union, because from there comes where you are now in your obedience to how you've been raised. It's a testament to your family, to your parents, and to those around you as well. And it's a pleasure to work with you.